Aloha. Welcome to Island Issues, our weekly public affairs program about Hawaii Island's people, issues, and concerns over the air and online at koacountry1077.com and at lava1053.com. Now, here's your host, Sherry Bracken.
Aloha. Good Sunday morning and happy Valentine's Day. Just a reminder, after you listen to Island Issues, you still have time to go out and get something for that special somebody for Valentine's Day and pretend you remembered all along. Today, the plan was to talk story with Hawaii County Civil Defense Administrator Daryl Oliveira and with Karen Anderson, who administrates the Facebook page Hawaii Dengue Fever Awareness, which is a really good site for discussion about the dengue fever outbreak on this island. Well, that was to explore what the implications were of having a declaration of emergency by Hawaii County, but not yet a state declaration of public health emergency. We recorded the interview Thursday afternoon. Well, on Friday afternoon, in sort of a short notice press conference that happened at 2 o'clock Friday, Governor David Ige did go ahead and declare a public health emergency for the state of Hawaii. Here's what Governor David Ige said at the start of the press conference. Thanks to Big Island Video News for letting us use this recording, which was provided by the governor's office.
Thank you for joining us here this afternoon. As you may be aware, President Obama will be sending a request for emergency funding to combat the Zika outbreak. And the Centers for Disease Control just a few days ago opened its Emergency Operations Center at Level 1 to prepare and mitigate for the Zika risk. So this afternoon, I did sign an emergency proclamation here for the state of Hawaii so that the state can be prepared to fight mosquito-borne diseases statewide in Hawaii. I did want to reassure that there has not been a Zika case locally transmitted here in Hawaii. We are doing everything we can to be prepared, to be proactive, to prevent vector-borne diseases here in Hawaii. Hawaii Emergency Management Agency will be working with all the county mayors and the county civil defense coordinators to ensure that statewide we are ahead of the game and proactive in responding to vector-borne diseases. This emergency proclamation does a couple things. It does provide access to the major disaster fund that will provide additional resources to the department. It authorizes the Director of Health to take any and all measures necessary to contain outbreak of mosquito-borne diseases. It suspends statutes and regulations to contain the outbreak. And suspends provisions of the procurement code to allow us to take appropriate action. It directs all state agencies and officers to cooperate to extend their services, materials, and facilities as may be required. And again, it can be extended as needed.
So that's what Governor David Ige said. Other speakers at the Friday afternoon 2 p.m. press conference were Dr. Virginia Pressler, head of State Department of Health, and George Zagetti, who heads up the Hawaii Tourism Agency. Governor Ige did not mention dengue fever as part of his rationale for declaring the public health emergency. He did mention Zika, but there are no locally acquired cases of Zika in the state of Hawaii. There was one case on Oahu. The person acquired Zika elsewhere. But even though the governor did not mention dengue fever, this declaration is good news for Hawaii County and our dengue outbreak. Here's why. The mosquitoes that spread dengue and Zika are the same, the Aedes aegypti and the Aedes albopictus. So if the state undertakes a massive mosquito eradication effort, that is good news for Hawaii County. Because this 2 p.m. Friday press conference was pretty much a surprise, and therefore not everything I talked with Daryl and Karen about is relevant, I wanted to get an update on what the state declaration means for Hawaii County. And I was able to reach Mayor Billy Kanoi yesterday morning, Saturday morning. After we hear from Mayor Kanoi, we will hear from Daryl Oliveira and Karen Anderson. Aloha, Mayor Billy Kanoi. How are you today?
Hey, aloha, Sherry. Good, thank you.
Mayor, It was somewhat of a surprise to most people on Hawaii Island when Governor David Ige made his emergency declaration on Friday, but it seems like it will be a good thing for us. Talk about the implications now of Governor David Ige issuing a statewide public health emergency following on the heels of Hawaii County's declaration of a state of emergency because of dengue fever.
Well, any emergency proclamation, Sherry, in a challenging situation, whether it be a hurricane, a tsunami, tropical storm Michelle, the lava coming close to Pahoa. What it does, it's a tool that allows us to move resources really quickly. It waives procurement. For example, if we need more resources, if we need more personnel, an emergency proclamation, both from the county and the state, it opens up and fast tracks and expedites that process. For example, procurement, if you're going to make a purchase, you've got to go out to bid, and those things take time. Hiring personnel takes time. But when you have an emergency proclamation, you can do that immediately. What it also does is gives an opportunity for federal agencies, for federal government to also provide more resources. So an emergency proclamation, it's not a magic elixir that will solve the dengue crisis. But what it does is it provides a tool. It's another option that gives our agencies, every level of government, the fast track, rapid response, flexibility.
One of the things, Mayor, that Hawaii County has done, you and Civil Defense Administrator Daryl Oliveira have been aggressive and have been spending money without thought to possible reimbursement. I understand that more than a month ago, it was more than $150,000, and obviously it's way more now. Doesn't this emergency declaration open up the possibility of tapping into additional funding from the State Emergency Fund to reimburse us?
That's correct, Sherry. So twofold to your question. One is we've learned early on and throughout the last 8 years, you've got to respond rapidly and full force. You cannot be penny wise, pound foolish. We've always gone with maximum resource saturation in any response. It's let's talk about reimbursement later. You've got to immediately respond with all of your available resources. So we did that early on. The county has spent over a couple hundred thousand dollars at this point in time. But with the emergency proclamation, we have a disaster relief fund that has in excess of $5 million. Our county proclamation makes that available. Now, with the state's proclamation, what that does is open up state resources. And so now the state has committed to providing an epidemiologist full-time for Hawaii Island, more vector control workers, which is the guys on the ground who's doing the response and spraying. We're very thankful that the governor has put forth and signed his declaration. We, of course, made our decision. You know, as a mayor, I listened to my civil defense chief, Carol Oliveira, and our team. When they say, Mayor, this is what we need, my answer is always, done. Let's do it. Let's move. Let's go forward. So when Chief Oliveira said it was time for the proclamation so that we could just have that additional flexibility, it's not that we needed it today, but we know that over the last 3 months, based on a steady, albeit slow, increase in cases on Hawaii Island, that a proclamation would certainly just give us an additional flexibility. But just so people know and understand, the minute that we became aware from a briefing in early November from the Department of Health, we immediately responded and drafted a proclamation at that time. And that's standard procedure in any disaster response.
Mayor, at this point, we're talking on Saturday. Governor just made the declaration on Friday. Are there any specific first steps that will be taken this coming week, or is it too soon to give me a detail on that?
No, it'll be business as usual in terms of we are all boots on the ground. You know, we won't pull back any resources. We'll certainly have more resources available, but not necessarily on the ground immediate, because it's not like there's a rapid increase of cases. Just because a proclamation has been signed doesn't mean that there'll be a different response. But we're very thankful because the tools are available if need be. What we've been doing in the last couple months is providing support to the state and making sure that the county not only has the resources, but has the personnel available. So our parks employees, our public works employees have all been vetted with vector control. So if needed, we wouldn't have to wait for additional state vector control workers to come, that we would be able to rapidly respond if the situation grew and required that additional personnel. But currently, the personnel we have, the resources we have, is sufficient to address the cases that are identified.
Well, that's what Chief Oliveira had said, that the need for additional resources was really to not address what's happening today, but to really do a thorough mosquito eradication.
Exactly. That is what we want people to know as well. The additional resources in personnel or additional resources for equipment or other supplies isn't for today. The proclamation really gives us the flexibility to move for what might happen in the future.
Well, it sounds like mosquito eradication is really the key to solving our dengue problem, but also preventing a future, perhaps, Zika outbreak.
Absolutely. I mean, the World Health Organization had just identified Zika as a global crisis, but the very same mosquito that has dengue is also capable of transmitting Zika or chikungunya. So we're very concerned about not only the potential spread globally of this threat, but because Hawaii is such a global destination, we want to be able to, if we identify a single case, to mobilize every available resource we have, because we definitely do not want that to happen here in Hawaii, especially on Hawaii Island. Prevention, education, communication, and outreach is key.
Many people have thought the reluctance of the state to get more actively and aggressively engaged is because of concerns over tourism, and I was struck by the fact that in the governor's Friday press conference, he chose to have two speakers, not anybody from Hawaii County, but Dr. Virginia Pressler, head of Department of Health, and George Sigeti, head of the Tourism Authority. Comment on the issues relative to tourism, although I know you guys have been very diplomatic and not saying that that was the reluctance, but what do you think?
Well, Sherry, we have had a lot of experience these many years, and what we do know is that in any response, we need everybody working together. That finger-pointing, excuses, or blame has never, ever been effective in a response to a challenge that confronts our community. What is effective is federal, state, county agencies working together, all of our stakeholders in our community, whether you're tourism, whether you're government, nonprofit, education, businesses, we all have to work cooperatively and collaboratively together. And that's been our mantra, and that's been our commitment. And Darryl, Chief Oliveira, is so great at not only bringing people together, but getting people to work to a common goal and objective. So, you know, my response to that question is we all are diplomatic and working well together, because there's no place for politics. You know, no matter how frustrated it might be internally, we will never comment in an adverse or negative way on anybody's participation, management, or leadership, because we all need each other to be successful. When we're talking about public health, when we talk about public threats, all the other stuff meaning, you know, politics or media or ego, that's all got to be put aside, because that will not solve and protect any threat facing our community.
Mayor, final question. The hotspot for dengue fever at this instant is Kailua Kona, and today is Saturday, and I know you have a soccer game with your kids at Kealakehe. Mm-hmm. Are you concerned about bringing your family to Kailua Kona because of dengue fever?
No, I'm not, Sherry. I don't want anybody out there in our community to be overly concerned. Yes, be prepared. Yes, be aware. Yes, protect yourself. But nobody should be afraid for their families, for their friends. I'm aware, but I'll be there with my kids, with my family, with the teams. I'm not concerned in that way, not at all. And also, Sherry, Chief Oliveira and our team are working 7 days a week. So we have employees, both state and county, working around the clock. They're in Kona working with businesses. We are on a rapid response, rapid detection system. So any reports we get, we mobilize people immediately. There's a lot of good people working really hard every single day to keep people safe. We should be protective. We should be aware, but no one should be afraid.
Anything else you'd like to add before we say aloha, Mayor Kanoe?
I'd like to thank Hawaii Island community. You know, we've gone around at community meetings in every district for many months now, and people have been very receptive. Although they've been concerned, people appreciate the information. I'm just really thankful for the good people of our community who are supportive, receptive, and cooperative. And that makes all the difference. And that gives me the confidence that we'll be able to get to the other side of this issue.
Thank you so much, Mayor Billy Kanoe.
Thank you, Sherry. You take care now.
And a reminder, this is Island Issues. I'm Sherry Bracken. We're here every Sunday, 6:30 a.m. Koa Country, 107.7 FM, 8 a.m. Lava 105.3 FM. And the podcasts for Island Issues are online, lava1053.com and koacountry1077.com. Click on Island Issues and then click on the Island Issues microphone. And a very special thank you to our sponsor, Hawaiian Ukulele and Guitars at King Shops and on Ali'i Drive. Our unexpected guest today was Mayor Billy Kanoi because of the surprise emergency declaration which Governor made. We're next going to talk with Hawaii County Civil Defense Chief Daryl Oliveira and Karen Anderson of the Hawaii Dengue Fever Awareness Facebook page. Next Sunday, it's Jeff Melrose talking about a statewide agriculture study. But let's get to Daryl Oliveira and Karen Anderson. Chief Oliveira was talking about the county's declaration of emergency, which continues to exist and provides access to the county's $5 million emergency fund. And Chief Oliveira talked about the additional flexibility that gives the county, but Karen Anderson had specific questions about the declaration based on comments on the Hawaii Dengue Fever Facebook page.
It appeared to us that it just addressed the issue of tires being accepted at landfills and nothing more.
And I think what you're referring to is in the mayor's proclamations, there's a specific reference to a county ordinance that we are identifying that we'd like to waive or provide some concessions there. And that particular ordinance, what it does is, as it stands, the county cannot put into the landfill even cut tires. Now, tires is a problem out in the environment as a vector and breeding ground issue. The amnesty program that was initiated early on so the Department of Environmental Management would welcome tires being dropped off, no charges, bring your tires in. Again, only consumer tires, so we need to take the next step for the commercial tires. But currently they cannot landfill the tires even if they cut them into pieces. Now, state law allows that to happen, but the county ordinance is stricter and prohibits that. So the reference to that in the proclamation just says if we need to go down that path. Right now, Environmental Management is working very hard with their contractor to make sure that they're getting all these tires off island as part of the recycling and not landfilling it. But if something was to happen dramatically and we were suddenly faced with the inability to get these tires off island or to properly dispose of them or recycle them, then landfilling it might be an option, and we just needed to have that latitude in the proclamation.
But that's not the only thing the proclamation did, right, Daryl?
No, one sends a message that we're in a state of emergency, that it has been an emergency. We'd like to maintain an aggressive response. And the other is to put us in a position that if we need to request resources through the state, we've initiated the local proclamation declaring it an emergency and moving forward. It's a standard procedure with every other disaster. It starts at the local level and progresses on up.
Right now, on Thursday, February 11th, we are at 254 cases. We get two or three cases dribbling in every day or every couple of days. Where are we with fighting dengue just on our own here on Hawaii Island, Chief Oliveira?
Well, we're maintaining, you know, the current strategy as far as vector goes. So vector has been aggressively, as you mentioned early on, you know, the local on-island personnel are working very hard.
And they are, and I do want to reinforce that. I think the State Department of Health folks who live on this island are at one with all of us. And I just also want to mention, until we started doing this, I wasn't clear what the word vector meant. Right. And when I talked with Mike Banfield, I discovered vector really is any annoying little bug that spreads disease. Am I right?
As well as rats when we start talking
Good
about
point.
Other diseases.
All right. So it's anything bad like that, vector.
Correct.
Okay. So keep on telling us where we are, Chief.
So as you mentioned, we have a lot of on-island resources working very hard. That goes vector, public health, you know, a number of different sections of Department of Health and county government. But the vector control teams have been committed to treating confirmed and suspect cases. We set the original goal of within 96 hours of notification from the lab, and they far exceeded the expectation consistently. It's no more than 72 hours from notification that they are treating properties. And where we encounter delays, it's not for a lack of resources. It's for difficulty getting consent from property owners. If they're not home when vector goes out, they leave, you know, calling cards behind. They try to make contact. In some cases, and again, the process that we identify, what I would consider areas for improvement. When lab specimens are turned into the state lab and processed through the system, many times what's the identifying address for people is their mailing address, which in rural areas, it's a post office box.
Good point.
So you can't necessarily find a residence from a post office box. So the vector control uses what information they have on the case and tries to make contact with the parties and identify the location. So As a change and a recommendation, one of the things we discussed with clinical labs as well as Dr. Park is that in the future with outbreaks, as well as where we're at currently in this outbreak, is change some of the processes by which specimens come in. Make it mandatory that a physical place of residence is captured rather than a post office box as far as an address.
Duh.
So it's just change the process. We can improve the system because we have a call at least twice a week with all of the response teams. What we keep trying to stress to everyone is we're very fortunate that in a sense that this outbreak is relatively benign. And I don't mean to minimize anything with that. It's just that we don't expect to see casualties in the sense of deaths. But at the same time, it's an opportunity for us to close gaps, make improvements, because the next outbreak may not be as forgiving. And we need to have everything in place so that we're in a better position the next time around.
Dengue has four different serotypes. So you may feel like you're out of the woods if you come down with dengue and then you're immune to dengue one serotype, which is what's going on here. But then if you get dengue 2, 3, and 4, your chances for serious complications increase fourfold, I believe Dr. Pang told us.
Oh, yeah. Chief Oliveira brings up a point. I mean, we have 254 cases, which in the scheme of the universe, other countries have thousands of cases a day. But clearly, we don't want this to get captured here. Now, Chief Oliveira, you talk about the testing. So what I'm hearing from you is that the state lab independently tells state health, and therefore you as well, where these cases are, regardless of how quickly the doctor is notifying the patient. So that's a good thing. But I've heard repeatedly recently that some people's doctors are not willing to test them for dengue fever based on what they believe the State Department of Health has put forward as conditions. Some of these people have later turned out to have dengue fever. As you know, sometimes people have a rash at the beginning. Sometimes they either get the rash at the end or not at all. And some doctors seem to be using that as a criteria based on what little information they've received. Any new news on trying to get a more aggressive testing program? Because I really think, and everybody thinks, we have no idea how many cases actually exist.
Two things with that. Yes, when you first shared that with me, based on what you experienced from friends out there in the community saying that their physicians were declining to have them tested, I did pass it along to Dr. Park and her team, because it's concerning if there's maybe a misconception or a misunderstanding of what the guidance that was put forth with the advisory that was issued. There's no reason why people shouldn't be tested if they're of, I would say, suspicion, in the sense that their history, their symptomology would justify that. Obviously, if someone is no longer symptomatic and maybe their illness was a month ago, the value with testing that would just say, yes, you were possibly exposed. And that may not even link you back to that illness a month ago. You might have been exposed prior. Obviously, we want to focus our attention and resources on those who are currently infectious, because those are the ones that are in a state right now that would make them vulnerable to pass this on, especially if they live in an area where, again, high presence of mosquitoes. So the resources are focused on those that are currently infectious. We start talking about testing, but I don't understand why there would be a reluctance to have people tested. Again, we're trying to, in the middle of an outbreak, try to get good information so that we can properly address and try to break the cycle or evolution of this outbreak.
Because a lot of people don't have health insurance, especially in the rural areas. And according to Dr. Park's analysis of the first 107 cases, the median age range of confirmed cases is 29 years old. A lot of that demographic is not going to feel inclined to pay $200 to get screened.
Well, just let me point out, anybody can go to West Hawaii Community Health Center at no charge if they have no resources. They can go to Bay Clinic. They can go to any of the community health centers. And I don't know who's charging $200 to be screened.
But they don't have the incentive to do that because they're told there's no treatment. You have to take Tylenol and rest. So,
and that's true.
The incentive to go get tested is to do your civic duty and become part of the database.
I think, Karen, you brought up earlier, though, a good point, and that is if you've been infected with one strain, you'd want to know, because especially if you're someone that travels, and we're doing everything we can to prevent this from becoming endemic here, but if for some reason it did, you'd want to know what you've been infected with in the event you're infected with another strain. As you pointed out, the reaction you could have or response you could have to being infected with a second strain puts you at risk for experiencing much more severe symptoms, to include the hemorrhagic version. So I think people would want to know that, like you said, civic duty is one. And if you're able to and enjoy traveling, you'd want to know just to protect yourself.
Well, what we're hearing is that the turnaround time on the blood tests from people that do get tested can be 4 to 5 to 6 days, depending on the week. You know, the labs are closed on the weekend. So by the time they get the result back, they're no longer infectious. And so what we've discovered is that in Sao Paulo, Brazil, they have a 20-minute turnaround time on a dengue blood test that tests you for all 4 serotypes in one test. When you compare that to what's happening here, you wonder, why can't we have that here?
Yeah, and I can't maybe comment as far as the testing process and maybe the different types of processes used, like what's in Brazil and here, but to provide some measure of assurance that even if their blood work is currently undergoing analysis to confirm or not, Vector is responding to their properties in spraying and treating. So we treat both suspect cases and confirmed cases, and suspect being those cases that are currently pending the results from their lab.
But just because somebody has a confirmed case of dengue doesn't mean that they got it at their house, nor does it mean that it's spreading around their house. It could have come from an entirely different place on the island. So you're doing kind of a whack-a-mole thing where you're going to reactively go into people's homes and spraying.
So, Karen, what would you suggest that you would bring as a recommendation? Because clearly there's no perfect way to deal with this.
What they did in the Maui outbreak in 2001 was they had 2,000 boots on the ground. Evidently, they had 84 vector people. It was just a lot more robust campaign. There was an emphasis on cleaning up breeding sites as opposed to just doing the spray reactively, because that's the most important thing that's going to really do that big picture long-term abatement that needs to happen so that you're ahead of it instead of always behind the eight ball on it.
Chief Oliveira is nodding vigorously on that one. Pretty clearly, removing mosquito habitat is the thing that has to be done, and for each one of us to do that at our home and for each one of us to try to prevent being bitten. Although, as I understand it, Chief Oliveira, there is work to add vector people to State Department of Health, but probably not as many as you're talking about, Karen.
Right. The current discussions are to restore that branch to its original complement before the downsizing that occurred. I think it affords opportunity with this outbreak to identify what is sufficient resources for an outbreak. As we've been discussing internally with our meetings, is that maybe it's relooking at the structure, the organizational structure, and looking at what is the appropriate complement of resources for an outbreak such as this, and moving in that direction.
Well, aren't the full-time team of entomologists really key, too, in order to go out and survey where these populations are so you can more effectively target your efforts if you have a campaign going?
That was a gap that was identified in the CDC report by Dr. Peterson, is having on-island entomological support. And Department of Health is looking at picking up an entomologist within the next week. They've already identified that person. He was a former entomologist with Department of Health that was part of that reduction and has capability to come back. I discussed with the gentleman his experience and what he was doing, and he shared with me that prior to the layoff back then, he was working on a mosquito study for the island. So he shared his experience where he saw the two different species, the population density, the dispersion. So I'm really excited with the likelihood that he's coming on board within the next week, and we'd like to get him out in the field doing some assessments so we have a better idea on where the vector problems are concentrated.
A month ago, when I talked with Rep. Richard Cregan and Senator Josh Green, one of the things we did talk about was trying to get State Department of Health to perhaps define their role in a health emergency more clearly, because I know many of us on this island believe their role would be to manage a health crisis. Clearly, that's not what they think. You know, we keep pushing on them to do more, and they've turned it back to Chief Oliveira, who is wonderful, but can't do it alone.
To that issue from a resident standpoint, what we have continually heard from them is that the Oahu State Department of Health is not the lead on this outbreak.
Well, that's what I just said, that Chief Oliveira has been appointed the lead, and he's good, but that's what we need a definition for, because this will happen again. You know, today it's dengue fever. It's probably going to be Zika tomorrow or something else.
The question is, why aren't they? Why don't they take more of an active lead?
That's why the state legislature has to push on Department of Health to define their role in a situation like this.
I think it'd be helpful because, you know, we have the conversations between my office or myself and my counterparts with State Civil Defense, Hawaii Emergency Management Agency. And it's trying to understand that, you know, the response to an outbreak on each island might be slightly different depending upon what resources and capabilities they have. When this outbreak occurred here, The decision to move towards a unified command with the county having a lead role was at our request because we felt we wanted to be engaged on the forefront of the response. Because one is we know our community. A simple thing like reacting to having one case in Waipio Valley or a cluster in Mililli and knowing the community and trusting the instincts of our people in the field and what they're seeing and having that familiarity allows us to react quicker than having decisions made from a distance with lack of familiarity of the community. I can't speak for the other county administrators as far as Maui and Kauai County, but we felt very comfortable. The mayor put a lot of trust in me and the community, a lot of trust. I always take that to heart that we want to maintain public trust in the response because what we set forth today is going to have the payoff later in the future with other events or incidents. We can have a potentially much more serious outbreak later, and we need to lay the foundation now. Many of what people talk about with the Maui outbreak was not documented. There wasn't, let's say, a formal response plan that was put out for everyone. And when we lose personnel or there's a transition in administrations and you lose institutional knowledge, in the absence of a formal plan, you're trusting information that got passed on verbally. And sometimes we lose resources to have that conversation with. So we're doing our very best with this outbreak to identify what strategies we put in place, put it to writing, identify where possible the outcomes with what we do. So measuring the performance of the aqua resin adulticide down like in places like Mililli, treating water tanks and seeing if the bleach solution that we're telling everybody to use actually works. So we're doing as much as we can to document things and put it forward to be discussed as part of a future plan for everybody.
Karen, you administer the Facebook page, which in general is really good. Are there any other key concerns that you want to bring up that Chief Oliveira might be able to address?
Well, our concerns are more focused on what's coming out of the Department of Health. The CDC's interim assessment of the response, Lyle Peterson, in his report released in December, called the state's public information efforts woefully inadequate, quote unquote. Yet they haven't done anything to change anything since then to improve the outreach, the public outreach. It's just fight the bite. And those of us who have been fighting the bite and working within our neighborhoods and cleaning up breeding sites and educating our neighbors and setting out traps, we want to hear more from our leaders.
And an interjection, I did ask Chief Oliveira about the issues surrounding tourism and ensuring that tourists know that dengue fever exists on our island and what they need to do to be safe and still enjoy a visit here.
There's a way to convey the message that wouldn't scare people away, and that is Hawaii is an excellent tourist destination. If you follow certain practices, understand where you're going and what you're stepping into, because this goes beyond dengue. You know, coming from fire and public safety, it's telling people come here, enjoy the ocean. It has hazards. How do you keep yourself or minimize the risk for yourself? Same thing with an outbreak. We have an outbreak that's ongoing. Government's responding to it. Do what you can to be educated and informed. Practice the safe habits. And if you don't know, ask. And it's working with the industry to make sure that information gets to the customer, to the tourists, whether it be the hotels, the rent-a-car, the airports.
I think it's a matter of shaping the message, too, into a positive, because if people feel like everything is being thrown at this with state funds that are needed, not just county funds, then they feel a sense of security in coming here knowing that people here are doing everything they can to keep the visitors and the residents safe.
And I think that's an excellent point. You know, people have been talking about the people don't want to come here and use mosquito repellent. Well, West Nile virus is a huge problem on the mainland of the United States. And I can go to those states. I understand it's there. I understand I need to wear mosquito repellent. It does not freak me out because I know that they're doing their best and I have to do my part. So you're right, Karen. It's the message shaping that it doesn't have to be a scary thing. We're out of time. I hate to say that. Are there things we should talk about that we haven't? You know, I know that everybody on this island is well aware of the situation by now, I hope. And I think the message is we need to really continue taking care of ourselves while folks behind the scenes work to get the state a little more actively involved. That's just my assessment. Karen, what do you think?
I agree 100%. Everyone has to remain vigilant about mosquito abatement, awareness raising within their neighborhoods, setting out traps, being aware, doing cleanups, and working as communities and neighborhood watch groups and everything else, which is what we've been doing down in South Kona in the high-risk zone since day one.
Chief Olivera, what other key messages do you want to communicate?
Well, I want to keep encouraging the community. What they're doing is helping. I think part of why we're seeing the numbers not climbing in large leaps and bounds is because the community is doing what they can to help. And we want to keep them encouraged. And to say that some of the actions that have been suggested may be long-term goals, such as a mosquito abatement program. You know, these are things that we need to keep alive and keep pushing as long-term. But for now, let's just end this outbreak and then work on the long-term strategies, which is mosquito abatement and vector control.
Thank you so much, Karen Anderson, for being with us today. Thank you so much, Chief Daryl Olivera. It is always a pleasure. And of course, thank you to our listeners for being with us. The interview with Karen Anderson and Chief Daryl Olivera was recorded on Thursday, one day prior to Governor Ige's unexpected but very welcome announcement that there is a public health emergency statewide, which should help with mosquito abatement. And then I talked with Mayor Billy Kanoy Saturday morning after that announcement was made. This is Island Issues, brought to you by Hawaiian Ukulele and Guitars at King Shops and on Ali'i Drive. Thank you so much to them. Listen to the podcasts online, lava1053.com, koacountry1077.com. I'm Sherry Bracken. I'll see you next Sunday morning for another Island Issues. Until then, please, let's all live and drive with aloha. Ahui ho.
Thank you for listening to Island Issues. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Email us, info@lava1053.com. Join us again next week for another edition of Island Issues, a service of Hawaii Islands Mahalo Multimedia.